So we're going to talk about the Dharma today, and that's a broad name for the truth of the way things are, or nature, in some way. And, you know, when different teachers come through, we have slightly different language and ways of talking about it, but hopefully there's something consistent that you're hearing too. And I understand that how we talked about the three pillars of Dharma last time, and included one of the aspects that I want to talk about today, which is about sila. Sila, or the ethical fabric of the universe. So some of you already want to leave now because you're in church, and some of you want to talk about morality, and out. That's what I've been trying to avoid all this time. Thought the Buddhists were cool. I heard John Kabat-Zinn said mindfulness is non-judgmental, so now this sounds all judgy. But yeah, actually it's a aspect of the truth of the way things are, it seems, and there's something comforting about it too, that there is some quality of the way that we are with each other and the way that the world is that matters. I was just teaching a couple of retreats. One was a month-long retreat at Spirit Rock in March. And some of those people had been there for 2 months, so February and March. In fact, there might be some people in this room that were recently liberated from that retreat. So it was a beautiful thing to get to sit with people for so long. And I did the last part, the March part. And so people, some of them had been there for already a month when we started, and 2 months by the end. And one of the things that happens in these longer retreats, and sometimes also in shorter retreats, or perhaps even in this 40 minutes we spent, is that people end up going through some kind of like life review, where they start remembering things from their life that they've done, and things that have been done to them. And the reel can start from what happened today. That's probably what played in this last 40 minutes. Sometimes you can go back, you know, what happened this last week or month. But if you sit long enough, basically everything unravels of things that you did in your childhood, and things that were done to you. And if you pay attention, you know, we're trying to attend to thought, to knowing thought as thought. But it also can help sometimes to understand something about, like, well, what's the scent of these different aspects? And one of the things that you can notice is that a lot of it that we remember that seems to have a very deep imprint in our being is times when people hurt us, or times when we hurt other people. So it's not even just the times that we were caught doing something. You know, it could be that nobody even caught you doing that, but in some way, like, you caught yourself. You know, you caught yourself, and that was in there in some way, and you relived that in extreme technicolor, excruciating detail. You know, both the times when you did something that you now later regret, or when someone else did something to you. So if this happens to you in meditation, or if this has happened to you, this is very normal, and in some ways, I think it's part of kind of a process of purification, or truing up of our being. You know, there's a way in which we become very kind of dissociated from life, or disconnected. And in these moments, it's easy for us to hurt each other. And then as we sit, we're actually kind of collecting back, we're actually kind of remembering, collecting back the members of our being, our heart, and all the little pieces that we chipped off and left in little corners all during the day or during our life. But they're not totally gone, it's kind of like they reel back in, like the measuring tapes that come back in. As they come back in, this discharge, this remembering of this stuff. And for some people, sometimes they relive things with a new wisdom too, like understanding, like, oh, that was actually a painful thing. I didn't notice at the time it was painful, but it was painful. You know? And I remembering like something that I did in grade school, sometime that I called someone a name. And in the memory of it, it was clear that the reason I did that was some fear. You know, it was like, oh, these other kids were going to turn on me, so I turned on someone else, you know, this kind of dynamic. But I saw that, both the pain of myself, and then I saw the pain in the other child's eyes. You know, when I kind of turned the attention on them in that way, and had to feel that burden of that in this way that at the time I couldn't or didn't want to. So part of what this tells us is, yeah, when we become more quiet and sensitive and paying attention, we notice that these things do matter, and that this is part of the lawful nature of who we are as people and of the way things work. So when people are on retreat also for these periods of time, you're being quiet and not talking to each other and kind of interacting gently with each other, and you can see the impact that has on each other and even on the animals there. So some of you have probably been up to Spirit Rock Meditation Center, which is where we were, and you know, there's wild animals there, like deer and turkey and lizards and so on. But particularly the deer and the turkeys are very chill up there. You know, they're actually not that afraid of you. Like, it's not like it's a petting zoo or anything, but they also don't have the usual fear, like, someone is going to hurt me if I see a human being. And it's a beautiful thing to experience, even from the side of the human being. Like, oh, what it's like to live in some harmony when there's not a sense of fear of you're going to be aggressive towards me or harm me in some way. So these aspects of the sila, or the pointing to the ethical nature of our universe, there's five different ones that the Buddha particularly pointed to for us to pay attention. And in this tradition, they're taken as trainings. You know, they're like trainings for our heart. They're energetic kind of power points, whereas human beings, living beings, we have some opportunity and we can do a lot of damage in that moment. It's like we have this power, or it's a potential for a lot of freedom. So this first one is about the sense of aggression and violence, and to undertake the training to refrain from harming living beings. Refrain from killing, particularly, but also harming. And even how different would our city be if that was the case? You know, if we all were able to take that and live by that, both in our interactions with people we know, people we don't know. I was just in a place watching the women's basketball, college women's basketball finals, UConn versus Syracuse. UConn was winning by a lot. But I'm such a dedicated Dharma teacher, I left before the end to come to a teacher group. But on other TVs were other sports, and so there was some ice hockey thing happening, and many of them, and periodically it turned from the basketball, and people were just like beating each other up, you know, on the ice, and this is part of the deal there. It was like, wow, that's it's so condoned within our society in certain ways for this to happen, you know. And it's painful, you know, it's painful for any of us to be on either end of that, to be the one beaten, certainly, but this is suggesting that actually also to be the one doing the beating is actually a violence. We're doing violence to the other living being and to our own heart. So to pay attention when that urge arises. And for many of you might feel like, oh, I never do that, but just think about if you ever get cut off in traffic, or you're crossing the street, or riding your bike, and someone gets too close, and the urge might arise, right? Even if you don't necessarily act on it. So it's helpful to be really honest with yourself and pay attention to that, to not pretend like, oh, I go to Javi's Dharma group, so I don't have any of that very spiritual. And actually allow yourself to notice when that comes up and be really honest with yourself and feel the burn of that. Feel how that arises, what it's like. Because only if we actually feel what that's like can we face it and then learn how to work with that energy. So the second one is pointing to being aware of the energy of grasping or greed or grabbing. So I undertake the training to refrain from taking what's not offered. So when we want to steal something, basically, or even I'd say like get more than our share. So this too is endemic in the world. It's actually encouraged by our society, that you get happier by getting more stuff. And here's also a way in which sometimes the fabric of this universe is not always completely matched by the way that our laws are. You know, certainly there are laws against stealing and so on, but I think about the stuff that just came out in the news, is the Panama Papers. It's like it revealed like large amounts of wealth stashed in completely kind of legal ways of shell companies and so on. And, in some ways, it shouldn't be a surprise. That's how our systems are set up in these ways that are inequitable. But there's something heartbreaking. It's like, well, you walk around the streets and there are people who don't have enough to eat and don't have places to live, and yet there's these phantom stashes of potential benefit for all. So for yourself, just notice like that arising of this urge to get things, to acquire, and particularly the greed that comes that even surpasses what harm this is going to cause to another. So notice that. So third one is around our sexual energy. So I undertake the training to refrain from sexual harm, sexual misconduct, harming myself and others using my sexuality. So when we were on the retreat, everyone was practicing as monastics for that little period, like temporary monastics, celibate. And it's not like any of these people were actually one person was an actual monastic, the rest were all lay people. So this is a challenge, like, well, how do I deal with this energy, this very strong animal energy that arises in some way that is skillful, that's both not repressing it, but not blowing it out in a way that doesn't pay attention to how it impacts other people. And it's a, like many of these, it's a very intricate, interesting, complicated, beautiful, and sometimes pain-laden path to learn about this. You know, we learn about this from the time we're children, recognizing what's true about this for ourselves and how we can act in the world, how others act toward this. So an area of great beauty and healing potentially through how we are with our sexuality, but then also a potential area of a lot of pain and harm too. So fourth one is also paying attention to an area of significant potential, and that's about speech. So I undertake the training to refrain from unwise and unwholesome speech. And there's four components to this. So avoiding false speech, so that's avoiding lying. Avoiding harsh and abusive speech, so like yelling at people and cursing them. Avoiding slander and gossip, so talking badly about this person to that one. And then the fourth one, which may be the hardest and most nuanced, is avoiding unnecessary speech, so idle chatter. So I've heard this acronym called WAIT, like why am I talking? So it's a good one. That was not from the Buddha, that's funny. And then the fifth one is I undertake the training to refrain from substances that will cloud the mind and heart. So with this is paying attention to your relationship to alcohol, recreational drugs, and mainly it's not in this tradition, it's basically like if you're trying to be more awake and aware, and if you have the intention to not harm people, then you might have that very strong intention, but if you take too much drugs, if you take alcohol, like you might forget that. You might do things you later regret. And many people have both done and had done to them things that were painful or harmful when someone themselves or others under the influence. Right? Like something you might be ashamed of later, or something you might not have done had you been sober. So it's just good to pay attention to that and to be really honest with yourself about that place of alcohol and drugs in your life and how that impacts yourself and others. So there's the five main ones, and they're presented like trainings, not like commandments. But there's one other aspect that I want to mention, which is something that the Buddha called the bright guardians of the world. And usually in the teaching, there is some discernment with different states of the mind and heart, mental states, you could say, between wholesome and unwholesome. So skillful and skillful. So usually when we act from a place of recognizing our connection with others and being more aware and sensitive, we tend to act in accordance with these, the sila, these ethical guidelines. And we tend to recognize that, oh, if I cause pain to someone, like, that's not something I would like to have happen to me. So we naturally refrain from that. But these bright guardians are these two particular kinds of mental states that you might otherwise mistake to be unwholesome, but according to the path of practice, the path of learning, they're actually your friends, they're helpful ones. And in Pali, they're called Hiri and Utapa. And there's not great translations for them, but I'll do my best now. They're both in the realm of conscience, you could say, like having a conscience. And Hiri is the part of conscience that has to do with your own kind of inner compass that makes you shrink away from doing something that you feel like is not right, that would be harmful. So even if you're on the brink of doing something and you're like, ah, no, like not a good idea. So it's from your own sense of goodness and wholeness that this comes. And I think it's helpful to point out that it's really different than a sense of guilt, where it's like, oh, here's a me and I'm gonna flagellate myself for doing something. So this is more just a recognition, very purely, of different states arising and what is connected, what is wise, what is wholesome, helpful, and what is not. The second part of it, the otapa part, is has to do with conscience also, but the part of conscience that recognizes, okay, I don't want to do this thing because there will be negative ramifications from it. So both if people knew about this, I wouldn't like that, but also this will have negative implications down the road in the moment and further on. So that's a kind of conscience that's oriented towards, you could say, external, like recognizing the causality of that, and how people might see you, that you didn't want them to see you, or even negative consequences of getting caught doing something, and how that would play out. So this is also considered helpful to us. Until we're completely free of such urges, this is considered kind of like bumper guards on our mind and heart. You know? Like, veer close to the end, but you get like bounced back. A metaphor that's used for these in the teaching goes, this one commentator from the Buddha Go says, it's like you have an iron rod, and Hiri and Utapa are like the two ends of the stick. So Hiri is like, if the iron rod on one side is coated in excrement, aka shit, so you don't want to touch that end. That's like shrinking away from your own compass, like, ooh, like I don't want to do that thing. Like, and then the other side of the rod is red hot, burning metal. So also you don't want to touch it, but you don't want to touch it because you know it's going to burn you and hurt you. So this is really the metaphor that's used in the these teachings. It's like iron rod with shit on one side, burning hot on the other. It helps you to avoid doing things that you later regret. So again, you know, it's different than a sense of guilt or shame in the way of the wisdom of the teachings is also not recognizing that there's not one solid, permanent me who is doing these things. You know, it's different than a judging that has to do with judging a person, like you were good or bad. So it's more like this sense of wisdom starts to tune in more and more to what is aligned with truth or with wholeness or with love, and what is out of alignment with that. And so in any moment, there can be some recognition of what's out of alignment and then letting go of that. So there's a lack of a sense of like, here's me and I'm bad and I need to suffer for it. Right? at the same time, like after you do something, or if something comes up that you feel like, oh, like that was really a terrible thing, then especially allowing yourself to feel the burn of that, but only so you can take some kind of intention not to do that again. And this is like for our own benefit and the benefit of others. And all of us have room for growth, you know, in some area or another around everything that I talked about. Like it could be for many people in speech, you could have some area for attention, but really in anything. I have actually not met a human being who has not had some area for growth and learning in this. And by now I've gotten to meet many famous and spiritual people. Yeah. All of us have some room for learning too. So you could notice how this is in your life. If you like to take this up as trainings, it can be a very interesting thing to do, helpful thing to do, to just attend to one of these and, yeah, how does this show up in my life? How does it show up? How do I observe this externally? And what's the impact on myself and others? It really is pointing us to also the connection between sort of internal and external and how they're not separate. It can be a place of great freedom and teaching us to live from a place of love and connection that can help make our own lives better and better and contribute to the improvement of the lives of those around us and actually more broadly speaking, freedom from suffering in the world. So I'll offer that brief teaching for you. Thank you for your attention. And I'm happy to answer any questions about this or even any other Dharma talks or meditation. How's it different from regular daily submission? Yeah, so it's in the Eightfold Path, it's in that same, like the right action part of it and right speech are connected. So the right livelihood is pointing to in your work, you know, what do you do? And in some ways it's kind of like, how does that connect with this sila stuff? So the specific professions that the Buddha himself like unrecommended are ones that where you habitually, and because of your job, basically have to break these trainings. So like being a butcher, or being an assassin, or dealing in poisons, or weapons, or even actually being a bartender, you know, like dealing drugs or alcohol, like is considered like unrecommended profession, right? It's not illegal, but it's like, in terms of the Dharma, right? So that's sort of the connection between them is, so kind of recognizing that what we do all day matters. You know, it's not just like, oh, show up at church for an hour and that's your training. It's actually like all the time we're planting seeds and we're training our hearts and minds in some way or another. And we're planting karmic seeds that could bloom one way or the other. So particularly the way that we habitually do that, and most of us spend most of our time, our waking time at work rather than doing anything else, is like attend to that and try to do something that's ideally good, if not good, neutral, right? And then try to avoid the stuff that is requiring you to actually do something against this kind of alignment. So a question about not taking more than your share. Yeah. So there's kind of like the bright line precept, such as like not killing, right? But then there's sort of the broader one, which is okay, not harming. And then it's like, on the positive side, can we actually act in ways that are kind and protective of people? So then with this one around the second one, the bright line one is like not stealing stuff, like not taking what's not offered, and paying attention to that urge to do that. I broadened that out to include, like, when do we have more than we need? And most of us do in some way or another, you know, including even just like stuff, right? Like, how much stuff do we have? One of my friends is a Christian activist, and she says, you know, the second pair of shoes in your closet are your brother's shoes, like the extra clothes in your closet are your sister's clothes, you know, stuff like that. It's like, oh, it doesn't seem like it's hurting anyone, but there are people without that. So that may be a more radical take on it, but there's a way in which that can be seen to be true. And with that, I recognize that cultivating generosity is a very helpful and important part of the path. And also, renunciation can bring freedom. Like understanding what it is that we really need and then letting go of what we don't. So it's helpful to look at that, even in terms of your work and how things play out. And I think as Americans, we have significant cultural conditioning to the other side. Yeah, get as much as you can, and that's the recipe for well-being. But if you look at the lives of the rich and famous, it doesn't actually seem to be working out that way. So. Not necessarily. Why am I talking? Let's see. I think I heard that from another Dharma teacher, but I think they heard that from someone else. So I don't know the true source of that. I should find that out, because I definitely did not make it up, but it's a good one. Ironically, he's asking me to say more about unnecessary stuff. Yeah, like, what makes it unnecessary? Yeah, it's a good question. Like, how can you tell that? I had a good training in that. Like, before I taught this month long, I taught a month some time in Brazil, and I had to teach with a translator for the first time. And it made me speak much more slowly. And I had to say a sentence and then pause, and then the person would translate, and then I'd say another sentence. And it made me realize how much more careful I was being with my speech in that context, even as a teacher, in which I am trying to be careful with my speech. So I think there's always different areas for us to attend to in that. For monastics, they have like very tight rules around that, like what they're not supposed to talk about. Like, they're not supposed to talk about elections or politics or any kind of frivolous topics. That basically they're supposed to talk about the Dharma, right? So as a layperson, we're not as hemmed in by that. But we can just notice, like, what's the effect of what we're saying or how much we're saying. In some ways, there's also like something connected to the taking what's more than we need, you know, space-wise or verbally in conversations. Some people tend to be pretty quiet and shy, and so if the people who talk a lot fill up the space, those other people never kind of join in some way. Also, there are very subtle things to pay attention to about, you know, this why am I talking? Like, oh, am I trying to create a sense of myself? Or am I talking because I'm nervous? Which is kind of like eating because I'm bored or nervous? You know, am I just talking to fill up the space? Because I'm uncomfortable with silence? Am I trying to impress someone in this moment? So I think starting to pay attention to what's the mind states that are driving us to speak can be really interesting. And then you can try as experiments, like taking some kinds of renunciation around speech. You know, playing with these in some way in your life can be kind of fun. Like, okay, if I enter a conversation, I'm gonna try and first ask a question before I start telling people something. You know, and ask a question and then listen. Or sometimes you could even say, I'm gonna ask three questions, you know, before I actually start talking. And then you have to be careful you're not disguising your talking about yourself as a question. Yeah, you can experiment with that and see, like, well, what's the impact here? Even just in some different conversations, what's the percentage of time I talk versus listening? what do I talk about, and is it helpful or necessary? Sometimes we talk to people about things that seem kind of like not important, but there's some way in which we're building connection. You know, it's kind of like wagging our tails at each other, like to talk about the weather or something like that. But other times it seems like, oh, I may be driven by something else, so it's good to check it out. Yeah, so that's kind of about like guilt in relationship to this kind of hiri or tapa stick with the excrement and the burning hot. Yeah, I mean, basically like mindfulness, you know, like training in mindfulness, training in awareness. And when we're sitting here in, you know, meditation time, we're kind of training under complete lab conditions. Like when no one's talking to you and you don't have anything else you have to do for this half hour, can I notice what arises in my heart? You know, can I notice what arises in my mind? And then practice under those conditions, like, oh, aggression, like, oh, grabbiness, like, oh, sadness. Like, this is why it's called practice, too, I think, is it's really good to practice under the most simple of conditions, which then gives you some kind of chance of being able to notice when you're in motion, in action, you know, talking to people and stuff's happening, you're in a meeting, you're in a fight, you know, you're embarked, like all this stuff. So I'd say it's mindfulness and allowing yourself to become more and more tuned in, you know, to your own heart, and then also to the heart of others. Like allowing yourself to be more sensitive to yourself and others. And it's interesting, you know, even the idea of, you're suggesting like, well, it's good if it comes from internal, like the avoiding the excrement part, but you know, I don't want it to become from a should. And I think there's kind of cultural overlays we have, because the other side that kind of like, is also considered wisdom, and also in some ways is good for you, because you're recognizing like, oh, if I take this thing and I get caught, then like, these will be the consequences. Even something simple, let's say like, if I floor through the yellow turning red light, right? So it seems like, oh, I just need to get where I want to go, it's fine, but it's like, okay, what if someone is in the crosswalk, or what if another car comes? Like if I actually hurt someone, I would feel terrible. It would be bad for that person, of course, and then for their family, and then the implications of that. And, you know, so sort of recognizing causality in some way, like that is actually a helpful thing for oneself. Because in the moment, oftentimes, we're just kind of self-focused, or like, we gotta get what we gotta get. So it's like, oh, see the bigger picture here. Yeah, I think in some other cultures they focus more on that side of things, right? Like that. So, but both the guilt or the shame are not the main part of it. It's kind of like with wisdom, recognizing causality, and then allowing yourself to tune into what is actually, like not some external guideline, but when you're in your most connected place of heart, you know, what feels aligned. And the nice thing is like, as people sit on retreat and get quieter and quieter, they don't become more and more evil. become more and more like gentle, and they spend time like moving earthworms off the path so that people don't step on them, and, you know, become extremely like emotionally sensitive, and, you know, hold the door for them when they cry, and that's like very, yeah, just like much more like connected in this way that sometimes like little kids are, you know, get hurt a lot. Or, so it's possible to feel very deeply, but also not be destroyed by it too, to allow that flow of connection and of feeling joy randomly and feeling sadness to be just part of the play of life. So I think, I feel like I should let you guys go, but if other people have questions, you can feel free to come up and talk to me too. So let's just sit for a moment and talk together. Appreciating our opportunity to come together to practice meditation and to reflect on the Dharma. Appreciating our own good hearts. If there's some practice that you want to take up for the week to try, you can take that intention for the week. Anything you want to pay attention to or explore more in your practice. May we all grow in wisdom and in love for our benefit and the benefit of all living beings. So thank you so much. If you want to be on my email list that I have, you can come up here. Also, I'm teaching a retreat for LGBT folks in June. If you are LGBTQ, I want to come. I have that on my website, which is anushkaf.org. And also, there's a new project that we are starting, which is to try to purchase a place for San Francisco Dharma Center. So if you have interest in being a part of that or helping in some way, including people who know about taxing stuff, things like that. Also, please come in and talk to me. Thank you. Thank you.